The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. Johnny, Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money. Managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you to create better financial habits. Envision your long-term goals and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of Johnny, Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy, your weekly financial planning radio show. Thank you for chiming in. Joining me today is Tony Payne, John Sestina. We are all certified financial planners. How are you guys today?
Wonderful. It's a great day. It's always
beautiful
a great
day.
It is a beautiful day. We're getting some very lovely weather, cooler temperatures, and the beautiful evenings where you can have the windows open. I'm enjoying it.
You bet.
John, you enjoying the simplified lives? I know you're probably enjoying the low volume of people at the restaurants.
That's true.
It's unfortunate for the restaurant owners, but...
Actually, when I go now, I went Monday night again, and it was packed, actually.
Good.
So they're doing much gooder.
Yeah, it's a tough. Growing up in the restaurant and hospitality industry, that by far has been the number one. Travel, tourism, hospitality has been just absolutely devastated by this last 6 months of shutdown.
They sure have been.
And that's obviously the concerns. And what we're seeing, and we're going to talk about a little bit today, is being the shift in spending and the shift in behavioral spending and basically the luxury spending. We're going to get into that in a little bit when it comes to the S&P 500. We're going to talk a little bit about friends, family, and money, how to manage that if people outside of the...
Well, that sounds easy.
Yeah, sure, right?
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah.
I need 20 bucks, Tony. You got it for me there?
Sure, right, exactly.
Yeah, a lawyer, an accountant, and a banker.
Yeah. So hopefully today's show is enlightening and educating for our listeners. And, we always open up the show with the current economy. Jobless claims has been the priority for a while now. Again, are we seeing some recovery? Initial jobless claims for the week ended August 15th, about 1.1 million. It's still right on target. They're right at where they're expecting the continuing claims to be about 15 million. We got a lot of people who need jobs, and obviously that has to be the priority moving forward. Correct, John?
It is. They have to open up the businesses and let these people do business. I mean, if people can go to Walmart and they can go to Target and these other stores, they ought to be able to go to the restaurants. They've done more work on purifying their areas than anyone, I think.
Yeah, someone traveled that I knew that traveled, and they asked me what they thought, and I said, well, the airports have never been cleaner.
I'll bet.
Right? If you're going to go, now's the time. And obviously we have, whether we talk about the masks or just sanitation and washing hands and so forth, those are certainly precautions we all need to abide by or take into consideration. And even moving forward, I say for the next year or so, jobs, regardless of the turnout of the election, either it's got to be the priority. You have to have a fiscal policy that will stimulate jobs in this country.
Right. So read the platforms and make your decision.
No doubt. Tony, any thoughts on jobs?
Yeah, just thinking out loud, though, I wonder how many of these may not come back just because of adaptations to business where people have learned or companies have learned, maybe we don't need this filled, we could do it a little differently. You hate to think of unemployment as improving efficiency. I mean, that's not really the goal, but hopefully there is a shift to what's next. Because some of these things may not be coming back.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tony, especially when you look at large office buildings in major cities like New York and Chicago. Given they've been working from home, they found out they really don't need the offices. And if you look at here in Columbus, is it who's the insurance company? Nationwide?
Yes.
They built this big building in Dublin by the cornrows.
Yeah.
And they're selling it. They don't need it because all their workers are working from home and doing well. So we may find that all that powerful real estate that people used to believe in is no longer strong.
There, and I agree. I think in the now moment, I agree 100% with that. And I still believe that efficiency, job efficiency, work efficiency is going to be measured at some point. I do believe the office space, while seasoned veterans like you, John, Tony, and myself, we have the capabilities or understanding of working at home, where I think maybe the younger generations just out of college, the training, the professional development, that's going to be the critical piece on the for the employer. How do you get your workforce trained? How do you build their education and foundation to your processes? I think that's going to be the critical piece for companies moving forward.
Yeah, the water cooler without the water cooler.
Right.
They're going to have to focus on that instead of these sensitivity seminars and all the other nonsense they're doing these days. Get back to teaching how to work and how to be prosperous.
Right. And even speaking of teaching, even for the teachers, you're hearing about the teachers who are having challenges understanding technology.
Yep.
Can they keep up? And it might be time to move to a younger generation. I hate to say it, they sound that way, but that might come too.
With the teachers, yeah, it's time to, you know, if they can't do the work, they shouldn't get paid.
And the schools are always requiring continuing education and development, and technology, unfortunately, seems to have not been a priority.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, so there's going to be a major shift in the workforce. And, Tony, that's a really good point. Shifting topics, we're hearing a lot of conversations about the wonderful stock market. When we hear and see, John, going back to irrational exuberance back in the late 1990s, we might be seeing irrational exuberance again, and people are trying to figure out why, and we're going to tell you why. I just went back 12 years to 2008 and just took a look at the S&P 500 back 12 years ago, and I was amazed by some of the things I noticed. And Tony, I know we talked a little bit about this prior to coming on air. Back in 2008, the top three companies were ExxonMobil. Makes sense, right? That was during the oil craze and oil prices being high. General Electric, which is shocking because they're not even in the S&P 500 anymore, which is almost tragic. And then AT&T. Those were your top three. Four and five were Microsoft and Procter & Gamble. But the reason I focused on the top three were the top three represented 8.75% of the S&P 500. So 8.75% of the S&P 500. Now today, and this is as of last week, the top three are Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon. Not shocking, right?
Those startup companies are starting to be registered. Come on, Steven.
right. Those baby startups. Those top three now represent 17% of the S&P 500. So it went from 8.75 to 17%. So people are saying, where's all this? You know, why is the market up? These three companies are making a ton of money right now.
They sure are.
All that consumer discretionary money is going towards Amazon. Makes sense. Everybody's ordering from home. Microsoft and Apple, everyone loves their Apple, right? Mm-hmm. Their iTunes and all the apps. And Microsoft, obviously, with technology. So, and even if you go to the top five today, you have Apple, Microsoft, Amazon. Then you have Facebook, not a shock. And then the two Google Class A, Google Class C. That represents almost 25% of the S&P 500. Should we be concerned, John?
Well, you know, anytime you get overweighted in one area, then you should be a little bit concerned about that. But the truth is, where is someone going to put their money today? The fixed rates are down, 0.6% or something like that. And so that's part of the reason also, Stephen, that money is rushing to the market because there's nowhere else to put it.
Right. And right. Cash is terrible. Cash is always good, but savings rates are terrible for return and yield. So we're coming up on a break here, and when we return, we're going to continue this conversation about the S&P 500. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN.
You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy with fee-only financial planners of Johnny, Sestina, and Company. If you're looking for the latest stock tip or how to time the market, you've come to the wrong place. If you want help navigating all the moving pieces of what makes a financial plan successful, tune in and take notes.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy, your weekly financial planning radio show. This is your host, Stephen Lucan, and joining me is Tony Payne and John Sestina. We are all certified financial planners, and in the first segment, we closed with talking about the S&P 500, which I'd like to continue the conversation because we can go many ways with this. But in brief summary, what we've seen, I look back in year 2008, the summer of 2008, where the top three holdings represented 8.75% of the S&P 500, which was ExxonMobil, General Electric, and AT&T. The other thing I noticed back in 2008, in the top 15, there were three energy companies. You had Chevron and ConocoPhillips in the top 15. And today, none of the three of them are in the top 15.
Big shift.
Big shift to technology. And John, we closed with my question to you was, is it bad that we're having so top heavy? The top five companies are going to represent, and probably by today's show, represent 25% of the S&P 500.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's also interesting, Stephen, that probably most folks don't realize that the S&P 500 is a changing game. There's different players as the years wear on. So your point about this heavy-weighted technology thing is just a bit alarming. It's not alarming. That's too strong.
Eye-opening.
It makes you want to pay attention because it kind of flies in the face of diversification. If you're buying mutual funds or you have an investment advisor, what are they going to be buying? If you buy an index fund for the S&P 500, then you're heavily weighted in technology, whether you wanted to be or not. And if a broker or someone is managing your money, they are looking for the top players, and they too might be overweighted.
Good point. Tony, what do you see when you look at this chart today?
It's big, and it's a lot of technology. It's a lot of U.S. technology. I think that's a great sign, honestly, for the just strength of America almost, that, hey, there are vibrant companies that have been created and made in the last 30 years that are dominating the world. I mean, I think Apple alone, if you look at it, it's got the same market cap as Italy has GDP.
Right, $2 trillion.
Right, so you look at it that way, and it's like, okay, one American company equals a European country. That's pretty neat. That, to me, is awesome. But at the same time, we don't know what the future holds here. And like John said, diversification is a big deal, because when I see this kind of heavyweight in all technology, I mean, just think about it. If the U.S. consumer's hurt, you know, reverse it around, because we've seen a lot of, dare I say, the mom and pop or the little businesses just be crushed through this. And in a lot of ways, these bigger companies with efficiencies are kind of swallowing the market, it seems. And at some point, if a consumer can't buy the new $3,000 iPhone, or they can't pay for the newest thing on Amazon, eventually does that lead back to this? I mean, Facebook, Google, they get a lot of their money from revenue from ads. So if these underlying companies are really hurting, I think there is some trickle down eventually. We can't just
That's
keep
a good
going,
point,
I
right?
Think. I
right.
Don't know.
So, but no, you look at, where does Facebook, that's advertising, right? If there's no one advertising, is Apple going to be the only advertiser?
Right.
Well, a couple other points. You made a good point about the small, like if you look at the Walmart effect back in the 90s and 2000s, yeah, they would come into the small towns and basically price all the small the small shops out of business. It happened in the hometown where I grew up in. Everyone's like, oh my God, we're getting a Walmart. This is fantastic. And then you had the clothing store that was around for 200 years, close up shop.
Okay.
Right? You had the electronics store, close up shop. The consumer got cheaper goods, but it did sort of destroy the economy. It destroyed the the purity of that town itself, and it's been a major shift, and that's what we could see within this the economy itself. The other thing I thought was very interesting is there's a couple things that haven't changed. Some of these in the top 15, you have the Johnson & Johnson, the Procter & Gamble, the consumer staple companies that have been around for a really long time are still there in the S&P 500.
Right, and on the banking side, J.P. Morgan stayed up there throughout as well.
Yeah.
Interesting things to look at. Again, not really to draw away investment recommendations,
correct,
but
no,
when you think about your bigger portfolio or what you're doing to try to stay ahead, you got to pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah,
we also have to be aware of you know, these companies are so large, these technological companies, they're beginning to exercise pressure on the consumer through government, through politics. And so that's a little dangerous. We see Congress jumping up and saying they want to regulate them, and that may be necessary at this time.
Right, and that will have an impact down the road with the stock price. It could,
right.
Anyway. So, again, as Tony said, it's not really the investing. What we're not talking about is specific investing, but just an awareness of what the S&P 500 is doing and how it is constructed today. So, just I thought it was interesting.
It was.
Yeah. So we're going to shift topics here. Just some conversations. I want to talk about a conversation I had with someone I know, and they were talking about retirement. And they're terrified of it, John.
They're terrified.
Yeah, they don't. They're afraid. We saved our money. We're good to go. I just don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
That's the problem. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
Yeah.
You know, so many people today, they are working, and their job is their life. Their work is their life. You see it all the time. You know, my career, my career, my career. Both husband and wife. And they fight through those careers, and they pull each other apart. They don't pay much attention to the kids. And then all of a sudden, they hit retirement, and they put down their Wall Street Journal at breakfast and look at each other, and they say, who are you? They say, I don't know. Who are you? And so that's part of the pressure. You have to, you know, have a more full life.
Yeah, I mean, not to get too touchy-feely, but I think we've seen it more and more in studies and in planning. There is something to that work-life balance idea of, yes, you need to save for later, but at the same time, just to keep sanity, keep some enrichment in your life, you've got to do some things now that, dare I say, are negotiable. You know, you don't just live in a concrete four-walled place. You go out and have some of the extras, and it helps you through the way, but you've got to make sure you're saving enough for later. That way you're not getting behind.
Right, and a lot of times these scenarios come up when people really love what they do, right? They're so passionate about their work, and they don't think twice about what they're doing, where some people, it's a struggle to get to the workplace, and they can't wait for the day to come where they can say, I'm out of here.
Right. You think of some people, and I just couldn't imagine them holding a fishing pole or a golf club. I mean, if that's the typical what to do
like
in retirement.
The guy on the other end here.
You may have staff in hand, though.
But it's just interesting because the psychology of retirement is, I never understood that in my earlier years. And John, you told me time and again how big of an impact it is. But some people, the other aspect is some people are terrified to not get a paycheck anymore.
Right.
A gentleman I remember talking to, he goes, I've had a paycheck since I was 13 years old. I'm afraid to give it up.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, you think about it, you're hopefully creating your own paycheck along the way. But at the same time, that's putting a lot of faith in yourself, your plan there. And that's a big leap for some people.
Well, even if you have an investment portfolio, you don't really have a paycheck. You're going to have to set up a way to withdraw some amount each month.
Yeah.
Of course, Tony, that goes back to your cash flow worksheet, so you know what to withdraw.
And that's it, right? Your portfolio, it becomes your paycheck,
right,
per se. And that's the mindset you have to have when it comes to it. So again, you know, retirement, we all look forward to the day to quote unquote retire. And John, I know we don't use that word from, you know, sitting on the porch drinking lemonade, but financial independence.
Yes,
right. That's what we're all seeking. And the day comes when you choose to work versus having to work. Well, if you'd like to learn a little bit more about the Managing to Be Wealthy process, you can reach our office at 614-326-3077 or visit us on the web at managingtobewealthy.com. You can contact us any way you like, set up a free consultation. All we ask is you fill out a questionnaire so we have a constructive conversation, and hopefully it's productive. We're going to come back from the break and talk a little bit about marriage and money. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy, your weekly financial planning radio show. Joining me this evening, Tony Payne, John Sestina, and is your host, Stephen Lucan. Last segment, we were talking a little bit about retirement. Tony, you made a good point about the word retirement.
Yeah, you think about it, it's fairly new. I mean, it's only been probably within the last 100 years that you expected to not die when you were working. So even retirement as a concept, still fairly new to us as people.
Yeah. Any idea when it was through pensions, any idea when John, tap into your history books, when pensions came about?
Well, really, it was probably more like Social Security, because that kind of put a cap on, 65.
Okay.
And when you hit 65, you're no longer useful, is what they thought. And, people would die a year and a half later. So they thought that was a pretty good deal. So I agree, though. Retirement, retirement's a misnomer. We three are lucky because we love what we do. I'm supposed to be retired, and I still work. So if you like what you do, you're going to work forever. I want to drop at the saddle,
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a valid point, and that's what you see a lot of people who are career people. They love what they do, and our focus is financial independence. I actually had a conversation with someone, too, about they retired back in January, and they're going back to work.
What made them do that?
Boredom.
Okay. I guess that's a good reason, right?
They said there's only so many things I can do, and I want to go back to work. And the conversation was about, well, it's a choice. It's not an obligation. You don't have to do it.
That's pretty.
Which that's the approach they're taking about it. And they said, well, then part of the demands were 3 days a week. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3 days on, 4 days off. Not a bad deal there.
No, not at all.
That's a good deal.
Right. And reiterating the point, it's a choice. It's not a have to. You don't have to do it. And there's a big difference there. And that's something that's nice to see.
Now, the ones that we have to consider, because we're not close to that, are the folks who have what they consider to be jobs that are, like robotic, and they're really anxious to get out of that robotic scenario. My dad was a machinist. And I promise you, when he was 65, he was ready to stop pushing the buttons on that machine.
Right. Yeah. And the factory workers and steel worker, all the people who built this country, right? That was hard labor, and they certainly look forward to the day where they could stop.
You bet. There's coal miners. There's so many we can name.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna switch topics, John. Two things I know you're really good at. Marriage, you've only been married once. So I remember somebody saying, well, I can't give you marriage advice. I've only been married once. So, but we're going to talk, we're going to talk marriage and money.
Yeah, 50 years this year, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Well, we'll have a non-isolated. It's a golden.
Oh, golden.
Isn't it
okay.
Golden, John, the 50 golden?
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
I'm just excited about it. It's a pretty good time.
You might have to invest in gold now.
Yeah. That's a good reason. That's a good reason.
So, John, marriage and money. When people are getting married, we wanted to bring this up. We've talked about this on the show. Any advice for people who – Tony's newlywed. We have a live specimen here.
We have a live one.
Let's get Tony on the hot seat here.
Love it.
So marriage and money. How do you approach conversations with people who are newlyweds and talking about marriage and money?
Well, I'm just going to speak from my experience, which so far so good. You be upfront, you be honest. I mean, disclosure is everything, and trust is everything. So open communication, that disclosure, I mean, really letting out whatever skeletons might be there and saying, here's what's here, let's do this and go forth. But it's that transparency. And then the other part, too, I think, was really seeing money habits, maybe. I don't know how else to say it, but, as you're feeling out a potential partner from the very beginning, eyes locked and you feel great. And then through that process, then you start learning more. And it's that learning more where it's, okay, is this going to work? Is this compatible? And if you're deliberate, I think, well, we can work through things. We can make habits or make changes where it can work together. But to ignore it, I think, is the recipe of all evil, of all bad things. So I think that's probably the worst thing to do.
I agree with that. Any thoughts there, John?
Yeah, what's a good policy is to sit down as part of the courtship process when you know you're getting serious with the other person and do a little financial plan. If you don't hire a planner, you can still, do your net worth and discuss attitudes towards money, because people grew up with different attitudes towards money. You know, some people are hoarders because they never had anything. Some are spenders because they grew up rich or whatever the case may be. So you want to get to know your partner very well. And then the best thing is to set limits. And so if you each have your own checking and saving, I like that, because then in that event that gives you some independence and it doesn't cause any stress over the money. If you have a joint account only, one of you is going to overdraw the account one of these times.
And it becomes a, your point's 100% valid, and I feel the same way about splitting the checking and savings account, and we'll get into why, but, you know, if you're judging people about, oh, you played a round of golf, you know, where did this money, and then versus you bought a pair of shoes, or you went to the nail salon, that's, that to me is irrelevant to the marriage and even to the financial plan. I think the important thing is develop the plan where for each paycheck, here's how much we are putting towards our retirement, towards our financial independence. Everything else is spendable.
Right. If you fund your goals first, then the rest is discretionary.
Right. And you can spend it on date night. I'm gonna take you out to dinner, regardless of who the spouse is and the wage earner and the volume. John, how do you have a conversation where if one of the spouses has the source of income and the other spouse is maybe raising the family?
Well, again, that needs to be a mutual relationship. I mean, Bobby and I, for the most part, she has not worked. She worked in the early years we were married, but then for the last 40 years, I'll say she's not had to work. And be perfectly honest with you, I have no idea how she spends her money. And I don't care, and never did care. So we've never had those conversations. She's never asked me about where I spend mine, and I never ask her where she spends hers. But it's probably better to set up, I don't know, separate accounts, spendable accounts, what do we call those, freedom accounts or something,
right.
Whatever word I'm trying to look for here. And you each put so much money there each month or whatever it is, and you have all the rights in the world to spend it any way you want.
And that's why I would say if there's a couple that have one source of income, you have that, each of you have that freedom account, and through that source of that paycheck, maybe you each get $500 a month.
Yep.
Right? And if one doesn't spend it, you might the next month you have $1,000.
That's
but
right.
You can use it to whatever, however you want. And I think that's a really good way. But the priority is obviously pay yourself first, pay your retirement and your financial independence first, and then work on that spending independence, because everyone judges each other differently.
Tony, you look at my spending.
Right. Oh, yeah, you don't think so?
No, I'm going a different direction.
All right, let's go.
I've been listening. I'm with you.
All right.
I am with you. But you're making it seem awful easy here, and I think we're coming up on a break. But when we come back, I'll tell you what I think.
I think we got another minute, though.
All right,
let's go.
So reality, though, I mean, right? You've got to even start at the beginning of just that full disclosure of here's what I like to do, here's what you like to do, what are our opinions on debt? I mean, as you go through it, then it even gets more complex, like housing. You know, hey, I planted the seed from night one, man. Night one was, we know that a house is not always an investment.
I believe Sierra listens to the show. Oh, she does.
Oh, she's on board. She's on board. Yeah, night one, we had that combo about housing, potential other things coming up. And that just set the seed, though, where, okay, we both have different visions sometimes, but the idea of talking together is perfect.
Yeah. All right, well, we can continue this conversation because I'm going to challenge
them.
Yeah, it's different, and that's the beauty of financial planning is everyone's got a different opinion, and actually the beauty of life. So when we come back from the break, we'll continue the conversation, marriage and money. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN.
You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy with fee-only financial planners of Johnny, Sestina, and Company. If you're looking for the latest stock tip or how to time the market, you've come to the wrong place. If you want help navigating all the moving pieces of what makes a financial plan successful, tune in and take notes.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is your host, Stephen Lucan. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about the Managing to Be Wealthy process, you can visit our website at managingtobewealthy.com. Contact information is on the page. Learn a little bit more. Share the radio show and the podcast with your friends and family. Hopefully it's educational. If you're listening now, hopefully you're getting some tidbits. We try to just pick broad topics, things that make your financial plan go well, things that may disrupt it, So what we try to do is avoid these obstacles or squash them before they become an issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And Tony, you were talking about marriage and money and go ahead. Let's
go. You know, I like to use the phrase plant the seed.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the idea of get a concept out there.
Are we listening to a newlywed here?
Yeah.
Well, maybe
Utopia.
I'm wrong.
Right. Okay. I say skin the cat.
Whoa. All right. We're going to get rid of that euphemism. Strike that. But no, the idea, though, of just night one, I mean, you know what we see is in our industry, what we work through. I mean, the idea of where people make their big mistakes, right? I mean, to go out and take a lot of gifts and fund a big old wedding and not have anything left. To go out and buy a house right away and not have enough money to buy furniture. Maybe start growing a family and commit to education when you don't even have a savings plan for your retirement. I mean, there's some obvious mistakes that we can see along the way. And thankfully, we had that kind of knowledge with our partners to talk through and say, here's how we avoid mistakes. Here's some common things. Because a lot of people don't see that. They don't get to peek behind the curtain of other people's mistakes or their life plan, really. I can't say mistakes, but choices there. So to really be able to peek behind the curtain and then plant the seed and say, here's what we've seen. And then to get the examples back, you know what? I've had people, I've seen that exact thing happen. And that's where it's like, okay, we are on the same page here. But it was by communicating and seeing some of the common issues and hopefully avoiding them early.
But that's exactly it. We see this all the time. And experience is going to be your best teacher. And through the experiences of many people, John, you have this experience because you've talked to hundreds of more people than Tony and I have.
Yep.
And Tony and I are getting long in the tooth as well. So we're getting to the point where we've seen had many conversations about money in the marriage. And, you know, a lot of times, Tony, you're spot on. It's about communication. It's about transparency. But it is also about understanding what makes the other person happy. And a lot of times when that money, that perception of money is hidden, there's always one side will do whatever it takes to make the other person happy, even at the sacrifice of financial destruction. Would you believe that? Right, John? You would say that's true?
It's absolutely true. You know, the central core to this, quite frankly, why 50? How do you last 50 years and so on? The central core to this is, you're coming together to become one, not to be two. And so if you're one, then you're working towards the same goals. You're discussing the same goals, making decisions about the same goals. And then you don't have all these things about, well, this is mine, that's yours, and so forth. If you get to that place, I think that's a little dangerous.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, too. I mean, that's, again, I think part of the transparency of if we're in this together, we've come in this union, we're going to go in the same direction together. How do we get there? And along the way, there might be a little different things that drive us. But to be so transparent about what does it look like for you and your family, I think that's so important.
Yeah, you know, Stephen, using your farm as an example, if you get two horses to pull a wagon and they're not trained, and one's trying to go one way, the one's the other, or they're not pulling at the same level, then the wagon doesn't move very well.
It certainly doesn't.
Horses have to be trained to work together. I mean, it's a beautiful thing when you understand it with the horses. So it's the same thing with marriage. Everything is about coming together. Look, when you form a partnership in a business or anything else, it's the same thing. You're coming together. And you have to be open and share ideas and make sure you're all going the same direction. Otherwise, you get, well, this is mine, that's yours, and then the conflict begins.
It sure does. I've never had a presentation I was giving to a group of people, and a woman comes up to me and says, we were talking about marriage and money, and she goes, I'm a divorce attorney, and she goes, you know, most, if not all, divorces are about money.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And she was spot on about that. So she was very appreciative talking about it and being upfront about it. But yeah, the transparency and understanding each other before the marriage is so critical.
Stephen, you and I have similar experiences. I had a conference talking with actually a couples therapist, and as we're sitting there talking together, sharing what we do, they kind of laughed. But it was a couple of them, a group. What we do, they thought they could use a lot of, and what we do, I was like, well, yeah, that's just what we do, is sit there and talk through some things and give recommendations. And the idea of it being almost financial therapy in a lot of ways, I mean, they share a lot of things, a lot of traits, so to be aware of talking, I think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, to give you, I guess I never told you guys, but many years ago there was a psychologist who was a marriage counselor, and he and I hooked up and were having sessions to train people for their marriages and their money and so forth. Worked out very well. Then he died.
Oh,
wow.
Messed up my whole program.
Yeah, that's a monkey wrench.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, we got a few minutes left here. I do want to, quick topic.
Yeah.
Loaning money to a friend. So, Tony, ooh. I need $20.
Not a problem.
Right. You trust me? Am I good for it?
I don't have any cash. My wallet's not connected to my bank account.
You don't need a couple of minutes for this one.
Okay.
Yeah, this one's easy, I think. If the bank won't give them money, why would you? I mean, the bank's in the business of evaluating loans. Who should have? I mean, you just have to be selfish here, I think. The idea of, no, a bank's in that business, not me. I can't evaluate risk. I mean, when they say the bank's not working with me, there's probably a reason why, and it may be a cold, bad situation, but the bank's the one that's in the business of loaning money, not me.
Yeah,
well, if you want to give them the money, give them the money, but don't loan it. It'll mess up your relationship.
And that's it. By giving the money, you mean expect never to receive it back.
Exactly
and,
right.
And if you go into that with that perception, that makes it a lot better.
Yeah, yeah.
No different than family, friends, whoever it might be. That's the approach to take, and that's the important thing, because it may happen, right? Someone would say, hey, I need a little bit of money. Obviously, the amount is what matters. Like, if you said, here's $20 and you're happy to give it to me, I might be good for it. But if I said, give me $20,000, that's a game changer.
I don't know, Stephen. I might see you every week for lunch. That's 20 might start adding up. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to set my limit pretty low here.
Yeah. And then what about if you have friends and you want to buy a house together?
Oh, again.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Isn't this what corporations do? I mean, if you have friends and you're really both into it, at least go ahead and get all the legal paperwork done. In the event that, say, it all works out and then something happens to you, it's a lot cleaner. And if it doesn't work out, in theory, it's a lot cleaner, too.
Yeah. John, what are your thoughts on that?
That's exactly right. You need to have some legal documents. Where's the money coming from? Which of you is putting in how much? Who's doing the work? Who's in charge of this? Who's in charge of that? Those kind of arguments always come up down the road.
Yeah, it's got to be very detailed.
See, I was going to ask John to go in with me to buy a boat. I thought we could just work it out, a little oral agreement
a boat
here.
Or a yacht?
Yeah, well,
John's good for a yacht.
Yeah, you know John.
You know the two happiest days of a boat owner, Tony.
I do. What are they, though?
Yeah, the day he bought it and the day he sold it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas I like to say boat is an acronym for break out another thousand.
See? Okay, so this loan proposition is not going away.
It's a hole in the water in which you throw money.
Right. So if there's listeners out there who have thought about maybe sharing a purchase of a house with a non-spouse, legal documents critical, and definitely estate plan documents.
Yeah,
right. The will, living will, it's got to be detailed out. So these are all important features. We could obviously get into details with that at a later show. So we're going to wrap up here today. I like the conversation. It's good. Marriage and money, and that was a good,
just simple
good talk.
Topics.
Yep. That's what it's all about. Well, thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about Managing to Be Wealthy, you can visit us at managingtobewealthy.com. Tune in next week, same time, or listen on iTunes via the podcast. And you're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN.